Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Yeah, welcome everybody. This is the 14th edition of the Macko and Cause podcast. Yes, lucky number 14. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Bob, how you doing?
Doing great, Matty. I would like to call this episode the unfortunate series of events episode,
yes.
If I may. I found myself waiting outside the building for 45 minutes, buzzing like crazy, trying to get into your palatial penthouse here in the Distillery District.
Yep.
I had sent you a text earlier from my wife's phone, letting you know that I'd left my charger at my mother-in-law's, and so therefore my phone wasn't working, and it was dead.
Yeah.
But that I would just simply come down and grab me at X agreed time,
yeah.
and we'd be off and going. That seems like a pretty simple plan.
Pretty simple plan.
But
my BlackBerry is in the shop for repairs, water damage, and other people, when their phone dies, they just get a new one. I found a good guy that will repair it and is honest and, you know.
Sorry to interrupt, but what kind of water damage? Did you wash it?
No. It, and this was not my fault. A dog, it was on a chair rest, and a dog whacked it with its tail and it went into a glass of wine. And
so it wasn't actually water damage. It was wine
liquid
damage.
Liquid damage.
And so is your BlackBerry loaded and now it's just simply like sobering up?
It is sobering up right now. And they're basically just having Gatorade and
McDonald's. And a big greasy breakfast?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's getting repaired. So I emailed you.
Do they wrap it in hash browns from McDonald's?
Yes. That's exactly
right. Try and draw the alcohol
out. Just draw the alcohol out and put the fat in. So I've been emailing you saying, hey, Bob, oh, I'm going to be a little bit late. And just said, hey, Bob, by the way, I can't buzz you in because I don't have a phone. So just email me when you're here and I'll come downstairs and let you in.
You and I have known each other for about 20 years.
Yeah.
And I have never once called you and had a call go straight to message.
Yeah.
So I almost kicked down the door. I waited for somebody to walk out. I didn't even care how it looked, Matt.
Yeah.
I didn't care that it looked like I was infiltrating the compound. And I came bursting up to penthouse. I won't say which one, but it is the top floor. And I was prepared to kick open the door and see a crime scene.
Yeah.
Because it would be nothing short of that that would keep you from answering your phone more
than
once. That's
true. Yes, absolutely. And I just opened the door. I'm like, oh, hooray. I assumed you got my message and you just came in. So I had no idea that that you were waiting. So
it's another example of our bulletproof chemistry here, Matt. The unfortunate series of events.
You know what, Bob? I'm going to turn this around.
All right, go for it. This is your nature.
We have overcome great technological barriers to still do this. We have overcome, you know, the fact that you're charged, you left at your mother-in-law, did you say?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Do you know why I left it there?
Why is that?
Well, I did forget it. But
yeah, you forgot it. That's why.
But I was lasagna stoned.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fair.
I haven't had her lasagna in a long time, and I had two huge pieces.
Of course
and
you
went
did.
Right to the couch with the phone.
Yeah.
Didn't even think about the charger. Didn't care.
All right. This brings up a question. At what point did you realize you were going to have the second slice? Like
halfway through the first.
Halfway through the first one. It wasn't like the first one was done. You knew ahead of time that, yeah, I'm going to be having
Matt,
more of this.
I'll take it one step further. I hurried through the second half of the first one
to get
to the second piece.
Now, when you took the second piece, did you sort of try to do it on the sly so no one noticed? Yeah.
Totally. Well, because my wife was sitting next to me, and I thought, aww, if she sees this going down, she might intervene, and I can't have that.
Yeah.
So I did the shoulder turn where you kind of partially obscure.
Yeah.
She had obscured visibility from where she was sitting.
Yeah.
And then I delicately, with my left hand, scooped it onto my plate.
Smart. So I visually blocked her. Then, you pinched Cece, so she started crying for a second.
Created diversion.
Yeah, it's all the diversion. Yeah, it's like magic. It's all about misdirection.
Someone's BlackBerry into a glass of wine. Everyone panicked. So there you have it, Matt.
Yeah.
Drinking has gotten in the way of your conversation, and lasagna has gotten in the way of mine.
I have not had a cell phone for a week.
How's it feel?
It feels fine.
Yeah, I don't care either.
You know,
those stupid things like this happen.
Yeah, this is really the first moment where that, like, the first real bad moment. Like Michael Landsberg's son Corey, basically, it's like I would die if I didn't have my phone for a week. I'm like, all right.
There's a lot of people who really just couldn't do it.
Let's call them out, Bob. The millennials. Those not hardworking, avocado-loving, not saving their money because they can't afford the really expensive property. Millennials.
I did have avocado toast this week, and it was pretty good.
Delicious.
It is pretty good. I've got a huge announcement, maybe the biggest announcement in the history of Macko and Cause.
Really?
Later in the show.
Okay.
And a brand new segment.
Mm-hmm.
A brand new segment. You don't know anything about this.
I don't.
But on the way over here, I decided we should do this. And it's called Is It Wrong? Where just everyday moral conundrums come up and you and I debate whether or not the right path was chosen.
Yeah.
We'll get into it in a bit.
Okay.
But coming up later.
You know what's funny?
Is It Wrong?
My first thought always goes back to bathroom etiquette. Like, well, whenever it comes to...
It's funny you say that, because a bathroom is involved.
Okay.
And it is... Well, no, actually, it's not even involved. It's a bathroom, and it's okay. Bathroom etiquette, yes.
Yeah, okay.
That's pretty good, Matt. You guessed that.
You know, it's, again, mind melt. Mind melt here.
We'll talk about Roger Goodell and the big question, and top five. Interesting top five. Who gave it to this this week?
This was Matt Bardley gave the top five list. Top five people named Matthew and Bob.
So you do Matthew and I'll do Bob.
Yeah.
All right. Pretty self-serving, but okay.
I got to tell you, it was hard. There is not as many Matthews out there, you know, just in any sort of pop culture, authors, fictional characters, what have you. There's not a lot of my name out there.
We Bobs. Mm-hmm. Have a tough go because there are so many great Roberts.
Yeah.
So many. But we're not Roberts. We're Bobs.
You're Bob.
We're like the East Coast version mm-hmm. of Robert.
You know,
Robert is Toronto, all fancy and glossy and successful. But we Bobs, we're down home. You know, we get butter on our chins when we eat our lobster.
So then you don't have Robert De Niro, whose birthday it is today.
No, and I didn't know it was his birthday. No, and yeah. I thought about that because his friends call him Bobby, but there's nothing more obnoxious than when you call someone by their nickname, but you haven't earned the right
to
call
them
by their nickname. Like, people call me Bobby. I kind of look at it, shut up.
Yeah.
Don't make me punch you.
That happens in sports all the time. You get the hockey player on, and like the first time I interviewed Wendell Clark, you know, I didn't call him Clarky or something like that. I'm like, Wendell. You know, or same thing, Doug Gilmore. I'm like, I'm not calling you Dougie. I do not have that sort of relationship with you when I can casually drop a Dougie.
Casually drop the Dougie.
Mm-hmm. Which is the name of my next rap album. I don't know yet who's going to be featuring on it, but there'll be many. Because I'm dropping the Dougie, y'all.
Number five on the urban charts right now, Matt Cause, dropping the Dougie.
That's right. Now I just got to figure out who I'm going to have my beef with.
I think it's me, Matt, and it's almost always me.
Ooh, that's true.
All right, let's get to our takeaways. Do you want to start off or shall I? I have no idea what your takeaways are this week.
All right, you know what? I usually go first, so I'll allow for yourself to go first.
All right, here is my takeaway, and it goes back to Leon Draisaitl signing his contract yesterday with the Edmonton Oilers.
Okay.
If McDavid sets the bar for Austin Matthews,
yeah.
Leon Draisaitl sets the bar for William Nylander.
Absolutely.
This is not great news for the Leafs. I don't know that it's bad news.
By the way, I'm going to stop you for 1 second to do two things. One, okay. My takeaway will actually fully work into this because it also involves the Leafs and the cap situation.
Really?
It does. And also, I just have to say goodbye to John and Tanya, who have been staying at Airbnb. First time you've ever encountered any Airbnbers.
Hey, John and Tanya, do you want to come over and just say hello so people can hear you?
Yeah, come on.
Last week, the unexpected guest was my daughter.
Yes.
And now it is the house guest of Matt Cause. So
yes.
Please just introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Tanya from the UK.
Yep. I'm John, also from the UK. Well, we live in London. I'm from Australia, though. My accent's kind of got a bit of the half and half British, bit of Australian.
We're not sophisticated enough to understand that necessarily. Yeah, yeah. It just sounds like an accent.
Now, absolutely. Now, just answer real quick. Was your stay out of 5 stars, what would you give your stay here?
5+.
5+. Very nice of you, Tanya. John, would you... And Amy, she's sort of the 5+ star of the whole Airbnb.
Sparkle.
She is the star. She is.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That's mean, right?
Yeah. No.
She's the sparkle.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. I'm fine with that. Anyway, they're traveling across Canada. Enjoy the rest of your travels. I sent them a lot of wineries to go visit because they're going to Niagara. Oh, yeah. Check some of them out. Guys, take care.
All right.
Are you gone for good? This is it? We won't see you again?
Yeah, this is
all right.
It.
Have a great trip.
Have a great life.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Lovely meeting you both.
Yes. Take care, guys.
All right.
See? Shared Airbnb.
I love the fact that the pod now can just randomly have guests at any time.
Anyone can drop by whenever they want. Yeah, exactly. Which we don't book guests. But see?
Oh, yes. The cap situation.
Airbnb. Not just about destroying the already small inventory for the rental market, making it more difficult for people to find affordable housing.
But a great way to meet people.
There you go. Yes.
There you go.
John and Teddy, very nice people.
Side hustle.
Yeah.
So 8.5 by 8, which is probably an overpay, but he's a good young player.
Yep.
It's one of those weird things where did Peter Chiarelli overpay to get this guy? Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a budding young star, and he plays great with McDavid. This really draws out an interesting question for me, though. What do you do if you're the Leafs and you've got William Nylander, though? Because his next contract is coming up. You and I have discussed how they probably want to ink him soon.
Mm-hmm. They could sign him now because his deal, he can sign a year from now because he's 1 year sooner than Matthews or Marner. They could sign him today if they want to.
The better he plays, the meter is running on this Uber.
Yes.
Do meters run on Ubers?
I have no idea. I don't do Uber.
I want it to be modern.
Shared riding experience. It's just destroying the cab industry.
So what do you do? Because the problem, I think, that Edmonton has is that you've paid an awful lot of money for a guy who feels like Robin to McDavid's Batman.
Mm-hmm.
See, Malkin makes a ton of money in Pittsburgh, but he's not Robin to Sid Crosby.
Yeah.
They rarely play together. You know, Kane and Taves in Chicago, they're not really Batman and Robin. It's almost like they have separate lives on separate lines.
But it'll be Draisaitl on one centering line, and it'll be McDavid on the
first. Will it be, though?
Yeah. That's what
I... Now, are we sure?
I was talking with Dave Poulin today. I like just dropping
Are you line. Dropping that name? Yeah, wait a second. Hang on. I'll give it a listen. Yeah. That was Dave's name hitting the ground.
Yeah, let me tell you, because when it's name dropping, it's Dave Poulin first, everyone else second.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he said, yeah, this is a great move because it will be 1-2 punch at center. It'll help them, especially on the road in terms of lineup matches. And they're overpaying. I mean, they're going to be top heavy, but that's sort of the Pittsburgh Penguins as well.
I think everybody's going to be top heavy in the future. Yeah. You're going to have your 3 or 4 big contracts, and then you're just going to keep cycling through.
No middle class.
Yeah, you're... Kind of like life, Matty.
Yep.
We're gutting the middle class and creating opportunities.
Yes, opportunities.
For the young. We'll just be generous and we'll put it that way. Like we're creating opportunities for the young.
Yeah, like a writer on Bleacher Report. You know, we're giving you lots of opportunities, just not a lot of money. Here's the thing. Just one thought about Draisaitl, and then we'll go back to Nylander. The reason why it's overpaid is this is one of the highest paid contracts for a guy's second contract.
Yeah, he's up there with Ovi and Crosby and Malkin. I mean, and McDavid, his company is elite.
And those other three guys, except for McDavid, or even McDavid, all of them had won a Hart.
Right.
So that's the and by the way, that stat brought to you by Tyler Dello from The Athletic. I steal a lot of stuff. I try to cite things every now and then.
They're just facts.
They're just facts.
He happened to be the one who found the facts.
Yeah.
But they're facts.
I found his fact that he found. As for Nylander, Bob, this actually goes to my takeaway. So we'll just ping pong back and forth.
Okay, so let me make my final point on
this. Oh, yeah, go.
So if you're going to have a contract that's comparable to Draisaitl for Nylander, and you feel like it probably won't match the dollar figure, but it'll get close, I think.
Yeah.
It's just another case why Nylander eventually needs to move to center. That you can't just keep paying wingers. You know, if you're going to have to build down the middle, eventually Nylander is going to be a center.
See, here's what you do. You play Nylander at wing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the moment he's...
With Matthews?
No. You keep him away from Matthews. That's going to boost up his point production. You leave him at wing. And then the moment you sign him to the long-term deal, Nylander, you're now our second-line center. And then you screw him by a million or two because wingers don't get paid as much as centers. That's my conspiracy theory about what the Maple Leafs should do.
Spoken like a true general manager.
Absolutely.
We'll try to keep those numbers artificially low until it's time to get him a deal.
Yeah.
And then we'll put him into a spot where he can succeed. Babcock doesn't have to play him on that first power play unit.
No.
He can play second power play unit.
By the way, this also from...
according to your conspiracy.
Yes, Mike... Absolutely. Also, Dello, 61 points for Nylander. Draisaitl had 77, but Draisaitl played about 3 minutes more per game and got a lot more power play time. So they might not be as far off. I don't think Nylander will get Draisaitl money. But, Bob, this goes right into my takeaway.
And I'm really happy that on August the 17th, is it?
17th,
17th,
yes.
That you and I have managed to find a way to make the Leafs the center of the sports world.
Oh, here we go. And this is it, everybody. Good news. No worries. Be happy. 2019, I want your feet up. I want your hands behind your back because the Leafs are going to be okay. Do you know why I know that, Bob? Nope. Because James Myrtle from The Athletic told me they would. If you actually look at, you know, the deals that are out there and what Matthews and Marner and Nylander are going to get, it's going to be around a little over $25 million for the three of them per season. And when you look at the cap, and the cap has increased, I'll read the sentence. Since the NHL's new CBA agreement came in 4 years ago, the cap has increased by an average of $2 million a season. So when you include that with eventually saying bye-bye to JVR and Bozak, and we know that in the third year, Patrick Marleau is going to be hanging out with Lupul and Stefan Robida, he actually broke it down that the Leafs can indeed keep those three guys. So I am actually not worried. It's not easy. It'll take work. And it's going to mean guys like Liljegren or Jeremy Bracco, a lot of the young guys are going to have to be, you know, somewhere within the top nine or top four, whatever, you know, depending forwards versus defensemen. But I'm not worried. I have no fear of 2019.
I'm just impressed you said Liljegren. Mostly right.
I know.
Have you been practicing?
Yes. I said it on the radio today.
Is that what it was? Yeah. You had one under your belt?
Yeah.
You did the test run on radio and now doing the pod where it really counts.
Where it really counts, because this is where the numbers are. So I was actually just excited to read this piece that, you know, everyone's getting worried about it right now. It's obviously better having too much talent than not enough. But, you know, between Nylander, Marner, and Matthews, 25 a year for a salary cap that will be around $78, $79 million is fine.
The reports of the cap growing exponentially, it seems, have been wildly exaggerated. You remember during the last labor cessation?
Yeah.
And everyone was like, well, you know, when they get back together and the business is up and running again, there'll be tons of cash coming in, and that cap's going to grow a lot.
Yeah.
And that hasn't really happened. This damn World Cup, do they even have one this year? Is it every other? Like, does anybody even know?
I don't know.
I'm assuming they don't have one.
Nylander was the MVP of some world hockey championship. I get confused by all of them, to be honest with you.
It feels like the argument that, well, you know, the cap's going to go up, and so they'll have a little bit of extra cash to play with. I think we've moved past that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, nobody knows what the hell the cap's going to do.
No, but, you know, if it just goes up, even just small increments, then, you know, they eventually sign these guys to long-term deals. And as we know, the maximum salary is a farce. The maximum salary is you must make less than Connor McDavid. So that's actually going to help the Maple Leafs a little bit, because I think Austin Matthews gets a little bit under. But the narrative was always, the Leafs are going to have trouble keeping these three guys. Look at the Blackhawks. I don't think they will. The issue is going to be, where do you find your effective young talent? Where every year or every other year, you're going to have to find that Connor Brown. That's going to be the tricky part. And let me ask you a question.
I think it's the Connor Brown. I know what you mean. It's more like who's your rear guards that are going to make a difference?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Hainsey's of the world, it's a nice move in a stopgap, not take a step back kind of way, but a lot of money for Marleau and the real... I'm trying to not let myself dislike the Marleau deal. I've been trying all summer.
Chillax, Bob.
I know. You're the chillax guy. You are the, you know, just have a taco, dude.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money.
I know it's a lot of money, but it's not impactful money because everyone else is on rookie deals. It's not impactful money.
But you will need to find somebody in the draft then, or by some other means, that's going to be the...
And Morgan Riley better get better.
I just don't think he's getting better, man.
Well,
he may not get a ton worse. He may improve marginally, but he's played a lot of games. He must be up around 250 by now. I don't have the number in front of me, but he's been a pro for a minute, Maddie. Mm-hmm. I don't see any wild gains happening.
Let me ask you a question. Okay. I threw this out on the Twitter machine.
Okay.
Who is more important for the success of the Maple Leafs over the next 5 years? I'm going to give you two options. Brandon Pridham and whoever else is in charge of the salary cap, or Mike Babcock.
Are you asking me?
I'm asking you.
Oh, Mike Babcock, for sure. You saw what happened even when... Like, how good are the Leafs now? I don't think we even really know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they had a lot of success and made the playoffs with a bunch of kids.
Bunch of very talented kids.
Very, very talented kids, but kids who have been empowered to succeed by a structure that really, really seems effective.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about Randy Carlyle here, and he had probably... Did Randy Carlyle have better players than Mike Babcock has?
No.
I don't mean in terms of the top-end talent. I mean all the way through the lineup.
Oh, I'd still go with
that.
The answer is
Mike Babcock, but what we're in the system we're in now and in a salary cap system, Brandon Pridham, his role with this team is so much more important than it's going to get talked about. And by the way, that's how it should be. As a sports fan, we should not be talking about the team's capologist, but on a day like, you know, just with contracts and stuff like that, you can't help but getting sucked in. But his role with the team is, I think, more valuable than maybe some people think. And, you know, if you've got really talented players, you don't always need the number one coach to win a cup.
I'm really excited. Maybe this is a sort of a 1B takeaway. I am super excited for the next 3 to 4 years in the NHL because there is a whole new guard of great young player that are starting to come into their own. Mm-hmm. And Edmonton is being spearheaded, obviously, by McDavid, Draisaitl. You can feel they're getting better, and I think they're going to be good for a while. I don't think they can screw this up. I think they just have too many good players.
Careful. People are yelling at you that Peter Chiarelli is the most overrated general manager.
I think so, too. I mean, Cam Russell, Lucic, all these deals. But you've got McDavid. And McDavid is, like, the biggest eraser in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there, you can throw a lot of mistakes at him, and he will find a way to erase them.
Yeah.
The Leafs have a bright future. I still like Buffalo's future. And I don't think we've seen the best out of Jack Eichel yet.
Oh, not even close.
It feels like the old guard, and by that I mean the Kings and the Hawks, they're starting to fade away. Tampa can probably hang on a little bit longer, I would think. But it's fun whenever. I mean, you've followed enough sports to know that when the churn happens, you know, it's like when that whole 2003, 2005 draft happened in basketball. And all of a sudden you've got these new guys coming.
Oh, yeah.
There's it always was 2003 with LeBron, right? Was it 3 or 5?
I forget right now.
But there was Carmelo came in, Chris Bosh came in.
Yeah, and LeBron, and that's all you needed. And those
you're
guys,
restocking the pond.
Yeah, and there's always sort of that little ebb and flow when there's a down year in terms of talent. And yeah, it definitely feels on an upswing in the NHL. And yeah, Draisaitl overpaid today. Won't be over as long as he stays healthy and continues that arc. He won't be overpaid a couple of years from now.
We'll see if he continues that arc, though. He put up a lot of numbers in a featured, very beneficial kind of way. When you're playing with McDavid,
yeah, you got absolutely.
The with or without you numbers are so important in this case.
Yes,
he's obviously really good though, so you don't want to disparage the kid because he's a really good player. He's just making a ton of dough. That's mm-hmm. all. All right, so those are our two Leafs takeaways.
Yes.
Obviously the most pressing things happening.
Yeah.
On August the 17th is what does this have to do with the Leafs?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other sports takeaways?
I believe the Jays have been 3.5 games back of a wild card since April. Like it, like the last couple of weeks, how far back are they? 3.5. And we all know the reasons why they're not going to make the playoffs, because they need 7 teams in front of them to A, not play each other, because if they play each other, someone wins. So all they need is 7 teams ahead of them to all lose 8 in a row simultaneously as the Blue Jays, a team that's never been 500 or above, suddenly wins 8 games in a row. It's just that simple.
It's the phony math, and the same thing with the three point. It's the 3-point game in the NHL as well,
mm-hmm.
right? Like as soon as they changed around the point structure for no more ties and overtime points and all that, the idea of how many points you can make up in the final quarter of the season, it feels like you're close.
Yeah.
But for all the reasons you just articulated, you're not really that close.
Nope.
I've had people say to me, look, like they're not out of it. They're not that far out of a playoff spot.
Hope trafficking. I said it over and over and over again. It is hope traffic.
And in fairness, who are you or I to say that people shouldn't enjoy the second half of a season,
yeah.
or the last third of a season? But they're not going to do it. This team, man, I think one of the reasons we're talking about the Leafs is the Jays have made zero case for being a compelling conversation
yeah.
in the city of Toronto.
There's little things here and there. Marcus Stroman, as of right now, his ERA was better than what Aaron Sanchez finished with. That's a fun story. Justin Smoke is nice, but at that age, Donaldson is back hitting the way he normally does, but it doesn't matter because in the bigger picture context, this is a done season for the Blue Jays. And the bigger concern is that the Yankees and the Red Sox have lots and lots of young, talented, positional players, plus both those teams will spend money when it's time.
Ding, ding, ding. You look at the Yanks, and people will laugh about how they would bring in these outrageously big contracts for vets to just help get them over the hump. But they forget that during that great run, most of the best players are homegrown. Jeter and Rivera, like
and
these
Posada and Pettit,
right.
Bernie Williams.
These guys were guys that came up through their system.
Yes.
Which is always the bet to come across a player. I guess partially because you get them cheap for a little while. But it feels like they're ready to do that again.
Yep. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that, to me, is the biggest concern. Mookie Betts, 24 years old. Runner-up in the AL MVP.
Xander Bogaerts.
Bogaerts, the name I'm going to mispronounce. Benintendi. Whatever. You know who I'm talking about. 22 years old. Jackie Bradley Jr., 27. Then you look at the Yankees. Gary Sanchez, 24. Didi Gregorius, 27. Aaron Judge, 25. Starlin Castro, 27. None of those guys are over 27.
It just occurred to me, Maddie. Remember a few years ago, if you were a Leafs fan, you kind of stopped paying attention to the big club, but you got really interested in who was playing with the Marlies or who was in junior at the time.
Yep.
That might grow into something. And it feels like the Jays are starting to get there. We don't really have that culture where you follow AAA or AA baseball. I mean, when we talk about Bo Bichette or Vladdy Guerrero Jr., it doesn't really make a dent the same way Nylander with the Marlies did.
Yeah.
But I feel like we're there again, where the smart fan is probably more interested in who they're going to get or who they already have that might be good.
Yeah.
I guess the last time this happened would have been the Lansing 3, and everybody kept a pretty close eye on them. But it feels like we're due for another version of the Lansing 3.
And to get that sort of talent, you're going to have to trade Donaldson.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
They're going to get probably somewhere between, what do you think, 6th and 8th pick this year in the draft, once it's all said and done?
Yeah, please don't try to do a follow-up question. My thoughts on the next MLB draft.
Don't worry,
don't,
I wouldn't.
Please don't do that. You want to do our top five?
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll get to the biggest announcement in Macko and Cause history
coming up.
The big question, which pertains to Roger Goodell and the power of commissioners, Ezekiel Elliott being the springboard there. But someone threw in Matt Bardsley. Mm-hmm. That's his name?
Yep.
That's a great question. He said,
Matt Beardley.
Beardley. Sorry there, Matt.
Yeah.
And in spirit of Matt, the question is, who are your top five Matts and Bobs?
Mm-hmm.
And we thought, okay, well, we'll split this up. You do Matt, I'll do Bob.
Yeah.
What do you start off?
All right. By the way, my also-rans, Charlie Sheen played Matt in Red Dawn. This goes to show you how tough the list is. I couldn't even put Matthew the Apostle. He was a tax collector. He can't make my top five list.
Well, he did have the, the big, what was his big speech again?
No. This is your, if we're getting Bible talk.
It's more my domain. Let's just.
Yeah. At number five, one of the greatest characters in the history of Saturday Night Live, Matt Foley, who lives in a van. I'm not going to do the voice.
No, come on, Matt. You got to do it. Your Chris Farley's amazing.
Yeah, but it takes me a little while to get going. But number five for me is like, hey.
Can you warm up with a little fat guy in a little coat?
Nah, I'm not feeling it. I'll try. I'll see.
We'll check back at the end of the list.
Yeah,
you can't deprive us of a Matt Foley living in a van down by the river.
Yeah, Matt Foley, number five for me on the greatest Matts or Matthews of all time.
That's a great start.
Yeah. At number four, he won an Oscar. He won an Oscar as a writer for Good Will Hunting. Also, The Martian is one of the most rewatchable movies. You can just flick it on any point, watch it for 20, 30 minutes. He had to carry so much of that movie, much like Tom Hanks with Castaway. Matt Damon, and that smile, it lights up a room, shows he can do comedic stuff. We see with Jimmy Kimmel. He obviously does the action very well. Number four for me, Matt Damon.
Matt Damon's confusing for me because he felt like the better of the two between Matt and Ben for a long time. Mm-hmm. But then Ben Affleck got real good.
Yeah.
And so now it feels like
it's great.
Damon
it bounces
is the
back
so,
and forth.
But are you not surprised a little that there was bounce back and forth? Because when Ben Affleck was with Jenny Lopez, and
yeah,
it looked like he was done.
It was the
he
dark
was Hollywood
years.
Done.
Yeah.
My wife thinks Matt Damon's really good looking. You ever like
I
find,
agree.
You do?
Oh,
I don't
Matt,
get it. I don't see
his
it.
His smile, Matt Damon is hot. I'm telling you right now, Matt Damon, good looking.
Can we rename the episodes of the Matt Damon is Hot
yes,
episode?
Absolutely.
All right, done and done.
At number three, got to go with a fictional character, Matt Hoopa, Richard Dreyfuss from Jaws. Hoopa, my number three, one of the greatest movies of all time.
He shouldn't even be allowed in, Matt, because nobody knows his name is Matt. He's Hoopa,
Bob. I was so happy because...
Well, they'll make him third then.
Well, what do you mean? Make him fourth or fifth?
Well, fifth at least. I mean, nobody knows him as a Matt. That's not fair.
Bob, this list is hard for me. Matt Hooper, number three. His impact on my life and Jaws is a little bit higher than Matt Foley, because there's a lot of other great Chris Farley characters, and is just slightly greater than Matt Damon has meant to my life.
Hold it steady, Hooper.
How about the part when, you know, goes to Roy Scheider's for dinner, and he brings the wine, and Roy Scheider fills the glass to the fullest, and when he starts to pour for Richard Dreyfuss,
the two fingers.
He does it. No, that's good. Just stop. It's a great little quiet little moment.
I would let that breathe a bit.
Yeah. At number two, simple one. He played Ferris, Matthew Broderick.
Okay. And you aspire to be Ferris.
I think
I aspire to be John Bender.
Yeah.
From The Breakfast Club, and you aspire to be Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
100%.
Ferris Bueller, you're my hero.
Yeah, Matthew Broderick, number two for me.
And he was also in Cable Guy.
Oh yeah.
He was in War Games. Mm-hmm. Matthew Broderick's been in a ton of good stuff.
Yes, absolutely. And I know the movie wasn't great. He did a good job in The Producers.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
He does a pretty good job. And number one for me, and this one's easy. The creator of The Simpsons, Matt Groening.
Matt Groening.
Yeah, Matt Groening. Didn't pronounce it.
What did you call him?
Groening. Yeah. Matt Groening, creator of The Simpsons, is number one on my list.
It's actually not a bad list.
Considering
you did pretty good. Yeah. I'm not sure I agree with the order, and not getting Matt Groening's name right was a little...
Whatevs.
Was a little weak. All right, so my top five Bobs. I'm going to start off... I didn't include Bobby Kennedy.
Okay.
Because he's a Bobby, and mm-hmm. I actually think Bobbies are different than Bobs.
Yep.
Bobby Darin, Bobby Sherman. Bobby's a pop name.
Yeah.
So Bobby I didn't go with. But did you ever know that I was named after Robert Kennedy?
I did
Bobby
not.
Kennedy, yeah.
Oh.
Robert Francis Kennedy, mm. And I am Robert Francis Mackowitz.
Okay, nice.
Yep. Number five.
I was named after Matthew Modine.
Is that true?
No, not at all. I was born in 1975. Career hadn't taken off.
Number five from the... From the lyric book of Del the Funky Homo Sapien, mm-hmm. Bob Dobelina.
Bob
Dobelina, Mr. Bob Dobelina.
Nice.
Right?
Yes.
Have no idea who Mr. Bob Dobelina is, but for about a good year or two, that's all anybody said.
I remember I think it was late public school, like grade 7, 8 or early high school. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, that song was played all the time.
Number four. Bob Dylan.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, the reason he was not higher, because he's
Robert Zimmerman or
Well,
something?
Yeah, he's Robert Zimmerman, but nobody calls him Robert. Like, he's not Robert Dylan.
Yeah.
He doesn't feel like a Bob. The thing about the name Bob is it's folksy and easygoing and, you know, it's chubby, you know, like a... Yeah. It's like Pablo Sandoval at the plate, you know, and his belt pops off.
Yeah.
There's a kind of a...
No one ever goes, oh, look at another decathlete with the name Bob.
Right. Or wow, Fortune 500.
Yeah.
Pioneer.
Yeah.
Bob whatever. No, Bob is like a guy. He's just a guy, you know. And Dylan is like the opposite of just a guy.
Mm-hmm.
So even though he's like the greatest of the Bobs, he only ranks fourth for me because he doesn't capture that essence.
All right. Fair enough.
Number three, though, Bob Wiley, a name you might not know. But it is the Bill Murray character name in...
What About Bob?
What About
Bob?
I
was sitting here waiting. I'm sailing! I'm sailing!
With Dr. Leo?
By the way, the best part of that, when they're in the office, and Dr. Leo, played by Richard Dreyfuss, who did
Who's
that.
Also Hoopa. Wow, Richard Dreyfuss.
Hoopa.
Love it.
When he's in his office, in the background, it's all just copies of his book. He's like, you know, Bob, I have a book I think for you. And he turns around like he's actually taking time searching. Oh, there we are. And then he hands him one.
Oh, that's such a great character. And you can imagine being named Bob.
Yeah.
When that movie was released, all I ever heard was.
Yeah.
So what's your name? Oh, I'm Bob. Oh, what about Bob?
Yes. Oh, that must have been infuriating.
It also happened with the Doritos commercial from a long time ago. Do you remember Bob? He doesn't. Like Doritos or whatever.
No, I don't remember that commercial.
Doesn't matter. That was a long time ago. Number two, I'm going to go with Bob Marley,
mm-hmm.
simply because
Bob Marley.
Yeah, and people call him Brother Bob.
Yeah.
It's just, you know. And number one, and this is a cheat, but I'm going to go with Bob Mackowitz Sr. I'm named after my dad,
mm-hmm.
and
you know I can't rip it.
I was going to say, and I saw it on your face. You wanted to rip it so bad, but you can't do it.
It's like a movie about the struggle of female. Lesbian Inuits. It's critic proof. No one is going to, you know, go, ah.
I actually picked that one, not just because I love my dad. And I think he's an amazing
guy. Your dad's
a
great guy.
He is a great guy. And I also picked it because I knew you could not criticize it. Like,
yeah.
I came in wrapped in Kevlar for that one.
Well, Bob, I have to congratulate you. You still found a way to find major fault, but only with one of my five picks.
I thought it was really good. Oh, and I wanted to put Bobby Orr. Uh-huh. I strongly thought about putting Bobby Orr, but I always feel like our generation, like you and I, and those younger than us who never watched him play,
yeah.
There's always, I know it's right. Look, I know he's the greatest player who ever lived, you know, or Gretzky, but
whatever.
You know, whatever. But don't you always feel a little bit dodgy when you talk about the greatness of Bobby Orr, never having watched him play a single minute?
Yes. Beyond watching the footage on YouTube, yes. And by the way, the only time, there's a sports broadcaster, I don't know if he's full-time, Jeff Merrick.
Part-time guy with the Fan.
Yeah. Does some interning. He did this silly, wacky blog once. Anyway, he has actually said that Bobby Orr is a little overrated because when he started to get to his peak, it was when, you know, more teams from the WHA, so the talent level was a little bit diluted, and that's how he got all his points. And I imagine when he says that, how many people must hate him. It's one of the few times he said something about hockey I found interesting. Is this going to be a thing? I think every week it's going to be one.
Find some way to bring up Merrick and just talk about how useless he is.
Yeah, just embed that in every.
We're eventually going to have him on as a guest. You realize that?
Yeah.
We'll just turn the show over to him. Hey, Jeff, say something about hockey.
No, the other way. Entire show, no hockey talk.
Wow. I feel a lot of veganism.
Ugh. He's just going to shame us.
Oh, which reminds me, should I make my biggest announcement?
Make your biggest announcement before we get to the big question.
All right. And also we've got, is it wrong?
Oh, yeah,
is
it wrong?
We can do, is it wrong after the...
Yeah, the big question.
After the big question.
Sure.
I'm going to do an endurance race this weekend.
Oh?
I am doing Tough Mudder.
You said before you were going to
do it. Oh, did I mention it on the show?
Yeah,
I'm mentioning it now because I'm actually going to do it. Before, I might have been aspirational, but now I've got the shoes, I'm registered, I paid the money.
Yeah. So the hard part's out of the way. You got the shoes.
Right.
Good job.
There's a pretty good chance that I might not make next Thursday's pod because I'm going to be somewhere wrapped up in bandages like the mummy.
So just again, explain to people what you have to do.
It's a 5-mile course, and there are 13 obstacles scattered throughout the 5 miles. And they're tough ones.
Yeah.
Like you have to crawl under barbed wire. Mm-hmm. You have to climb over really high fences on ropes. You know, remember if you've ever seen the movie Stripes when they go through the basic training?
It's funny. I was thinking the exact same thing. And eventually Candy.
And I'm going to be Candy. I'm going to be Ox. And eventually I'm just going to tip over and someone's going to have to carry me to a F-150 pickup truck and bring me back to Toronto. I'm actually really nervous about it, Maddie.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I can do it. In fact, I'll go one step further. Mm-hmm. I know I can't do it.
That's why that's the admirable part. In life, you always have to scare yourself every now and then. So that is fantastic.
Yeah, I'm not scared as much as I am not looking forward to pain.
Uncomfortable.
It's the pain, though. It's not like, do I have the courage to do it? Mm-hmm. It's like, how bad is this going to hurt?
The important thing, Bob, is that you've done the two most important things.
The shoes.
The shoes.
Uh-huh.
And you had the second serving of lasagna, which is what's going to help you get you over the top.
Carbon up for the game, kids.
Carbon up for the game.
Naps and pasta all week long.
There you go.
It's going to be terrible.
All right.
So should we get to the big question?
Yes. The big question, which is, how do you feel, or is it good or bad, for leagues to take justice in their own hands? And this goes with Ezekiel Elliott. The NFL came down with a 6-game suspension. The NFLPA and Elliott right now are appealing it. And there's a lot of leaked transcripts and information, which I think is just ugly and really shouldn't have any part of it. We don't need to know any of this information until everything has been settled. But before we get to it, one part of it, and I was mentioning this the other day, Roger Goodell deserves credit. And that can be a difficult thing because, let's face it, during Ray Rice, Roger Goodell was a fool, and Roger Goodell screwed that up. But think what's happened since. Think about this, the Ezekiel Elliott case. Since the end of Ray Rice, you know what Goodell did? Brought on several high-powered women. He brought on Lisa Friel, special counsel for investigations, lead investigator Kia Roberts, and VP of social responsibility Anna Isaacson. Then on top of that, this actual specific case with Elliott brought on 4 different individuals, men and women from different walks of life, and none of them were middle-aged, rich, white guys. And they went through all the transcripts and information. On top of that, Elliott wasn't a quick thing. 13 months. It was a 13-month investigation. thousands of texts and phone calls, and a 160-page report. Due diligence was done. New voices were brought in. Voices were that were different from him. And say what you want about the six games. Goodell handled this the exact way you would have wanted the Ray Rice situation.
I think they learned about the importance of independent voices. Mm-hmm. That if there was one point of contention over and over again that came up was that Goodell has too much singular power to make these kinds of decisions and to uphold them. I still don't get the idea of the commissioner making the ruling, but then also hearing the appeal. Mm-hmm. It feels like that's just too...
But he's not going to be alone. It's not going to be him on his own making
the
decision.
No, but ultimately it falls on his plate.
Well, eventually someone has
to make the call, and it's going to be his. Like, you think back to Bountygate, and when they eventually brought in Paul Tagliabue, and he vacated a bunch of the suspensions that Goodell threw out there. I think this is the biggest problem people have with the idea. Is it good or is it bad for the commissioner to be the arbiter of these decisions? I think the biggest problem the players have, that the PA has, is not that someone hands out the punishment because someone has to, but that he's the final guy and that it's a process, it's too self-contained by the commissioner's office.
But there is at least, first off, there has to be...
And that's changing, like to your point, this is less true of
consider now
than it was 2 years ago.
Consider now what was, but I don't see a lot of praise for Goodell, and I get it. Listen, his leadership under Ray Rice was horrible, and just the back and forth and... the inconsistency. We all ripped him for it, rightfully so.
In fairness, though, they investigated Tom Brady just as hard, and that was stupid, and it was self-serving, mm-hmm. and it was misleading.
Yep.
So the idea of the due diligence, it's not that it doesn't matter. It always matters that you do your due diligence, but we've seen them do this before where it's been for completely selfish reasons.
And think about this. Actually, I'm going to go the opposite of selfish. Roger Goodell gets paid almost $40 million a year. Oh, that's a lot of money. Last year, he pissed off one of the most influential owners in the NFL, Bob Kraft. What has he done now? He's pissed off the most influential owner, the guy that helped bring St. Louis to Los Angeles. So for Roger Goodell, if you want to stay cozy with that really well-paid job, you've pissed off the two owners you don't want to
do. Yeah, people have wondered whether or not he can survive without Kraft and Jones.
And
you've
right
seen
now,
this before, right? You think to Rob Manfred when he was coming in, and they were deciding who would be in baseball the succeeder, the guy to succeed from Bud Selig. Mm-hmm. And people have always wondered, did Paul Godfrey and the fact that he didn't get behind Manfred, did that expedite his departure?
Yeah.
You know, was it somehow backroom commissioner office type stuff that really poisoned the well against Godfrey? Commissioners have long memories. You know, it's been pointed out to me a few times. Neil Smith, after he won a cup in New York in 94, didn't get another job.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
how
true.
How much does a commissioner who wasn't happy with the way he was running his team in New York have to do with maybe whispering in people's ears? So that relationship, to your point, between owner and commissioner, it's a very...
I'm not saying put him on a giant statue, which would probably get torn down because, you know, that's sign of the times. But at the very least, go, hey, Goodell, you have shown improvement. And at the very least, even if it's all for show, I don't care if it's for show. As long as the process has been done in a better way, that's great.
But here's my question. Should they be involved at all? Because all you do is court criticism for the league. I don't know that there's any win with this. For example, I've heard it said, and I think there's a good point here, that if the baseline punishment in a zero tolerance policy against domestic violence is six games, and all the things that Ezekiel Elliott did happened the way his accuser has claimed they have, then why only six? Like, why did he get the minimum? Why did he get the baseline? Shouldn't he have been suspended more? I mean, if, in fact, these crimes have been that consistent and that terrible, mm-hmm. maybe you should have gotten a year. Are you playing politics at that point where maybe you don't want to piss off a Jerry Jones and cost him, you know, the driving force behind his offense? Is it too much money for all the other owners because Dallas Cowboys in prime time drives the needle?
Highest ratings.
They have a big year. So there are so many potential conflicts of interest. Mm-hmm. Why should they be involved at all? It almost feels like you have to recuse yourself from the final decisions.
I think it's because...
Or you'll always be criticized.
Oh, yeah. Here's the thing. You're always going to be criticized. Just accept that right now. If you're the NFL or any league doing this, you are going to be criticized. You will never get 100% approval rating. I like this. I like that the NFL, and I like it because I wouldn't want it if it didn't have this much weight behind it. Because if you do...
Do you mean the weight of the investigation?
Yeah, because if 13 months worth... That's a lot of manpower. That's millions of dollars you are spending.
And that was after the Columbus Police Department refused to pursue the case any further because they said the information was dubious.
And the Columbus Police Department won't have the money, resources, or manpower to investigate this to the level that the NFL can.
Which is a really sad statement when you think that people's claims can't be investigated that thoroughly.
But it's both sad and it's the reality. I understand why the NFL does it because they also push themselves as a public trust, as you know, role models and all of that, which cynically, you know, there's 100 holes to punch in that.
Ding, ding, ding. To me, that's where this really comes down to, is that idea of where they exist as a private industry and a private club, in essence, and when it's part of the public trust. They see themselves as part of the public trust when it's time to ask for money for stadiums.
Or want you to buy their jerseys of your heroes.
And in fact, there was actually an antitrust thing that was finally broken up where they were considered a club that they were considered a public entity for a long time tax purposes. So sports leagues are really weird about people outside their world trying to govern what they do.
Mm-hmm.
To move this to hockey for a second, you see this all the time when it comes to violence. They may not have the same kind of issues of domestic violence and drug use that, you know, the NFL has, but when all the concussion stuff was coming down and there was the talk about fighting and headshots and this and that, how much do you think Gary Bettman would have wanted an independent group to decide what was fair and what wasn't?
Whatever number is less than zero.
100%.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, Bettman isn't exactly warm to outsiders. This isn't like, come in and let me get you a hot cup of cocoa from the winter.
Because, and I think this is true of all the sports, they have the mentality from the commissioner's office through the owners, this is what we do. Here's how we play it. Here are our rules. And it needs to be self-contained because it doesn't make any sense in the real world.
Yep. Oh, no, you're right. But
like, this is really arbitrary. Like, they don't have to do anything. What does the NFL have to do anything?
They don't. They
with
don't.
Ezekiel Elliott.
Oh, no, they don't have to do a thing.
He's been cleared legally.
Yes. He's been cleared legally, just like Bill Cosby. 100% innocent. I like that they do it. And I like that they do it despite the fact that there is a lot of landmines there. Because in domestic abuse, how many cases don't, you know, actually get out there? And then how many times does the victim, they back down because of pressure, because of pain or shame or whatever, or victim shaming, or just a myriad of things. And the NFL is not going to cure it. But if it can make it a little bit better, if it can raise a tiny bit more awareness, and if that means your fantasy football team gets screwed a little bit and you're wondering if Darren McFadden, what he's going to do against the Giants in week one, so be it. And I know, by the way, I'm giving the easy answer by saying I am pro reduced domestic violence and abuse by 1%. This, by the way, is the least controversial stance I can take.
No, you're just glad that the league's invested and they're doing something. And you have faith that they have done their due diligence, as you said.
They've brought in so many more voices, different voices.
And that this is a fair decision that they don't have to do, but that they choose to do. So I'll grant you that. You know what I find all these high-powered cases do? Whether it's this with Ezekiel Elliott, because you know it's going to get ugly.
Yep.
It's already getting ugly between
text
the PA
messages and being released and the NFLPA saying, how dare you? And the NFL saying, you're victim shaming. And blah, blah, blah.
So what I find is all these high profile court cases prove to the public just how screwed up the court system is.
Oh, yeah.
They make it feel really sort of nauseous to know that if you decide to go this route, it's filled with ugliness and things that don't feel like they should happen, but they do, and they're permissible. A lot of the old stereotypes come up again and again and again.
And justice is very difficult to actually obtain.
Yeah. It's kind of sad in the sense that I've never come up with a good answer for how do you protect women's rights in court, because the guy has a right to defend himself. Mm-hmm. And if their lawyers choose to defend him by defaming the woman, that's a pretty creepy strategy.
Yep.
But it's not an illegal strategy.
Nope, it's not. In the end, I'm in favor of it despite the minefields that are there, and something I rarely do, giving credit to Roger Goodell.
So do you agree, though, that the fact that commissioners have this kind of power over their leagues, do you like it or not like it? Because I think that was really the question at the beginning.
Well, his power is certainly diluted from what it was 3 years ago. If not him, then I mean, listen, if you wanted to take it a step further where the punishment is now out of his hand, where the NFL sets guidelines and you have, you know, that same group, the four people's names I alluded to, one's, you know, a former attorney general of New Jersey, one is the former chair of the SEC commission, one is the CEO of the Women of Color Network, and one was a former defensive back, Ken Houston, with the Houston Oilers back in the 70s and 80s. So if they get to decide, fine.
My final statement on this is I feel like a commissioner has to give out the initial punishment. That's his job. Mm-hmm. But there should be an independent tribunal that oversees any kind of appeal. And the commissioner should be separate from it. Mm-hmm. And it should almost be like an arbitration case contractually, where the two sides make their cases, and then eventually it just goes to an independent arbitrator who decides who makes more sense. In contract cases, it's the player or the team.
Yeah.
And they just come up with a dollar figure based on comparables. I almost feel like there should be an ethical version of that, and there should be some kind of independently appointed group that makes those final decisions, especially in cases like this where there's a lot of gray area, and maybe an independent group would see fit to make it 10 games. And you know what? Then Jerry Jones can't complain to Roger Goodell.
By the way, Jerry Jones,
last year, I agree with the commissioner. 4 games for this heinous crime that Tom Brady did that actually never happened and the NFL fed lies to ESPN versus this year, how dare you with one of my players?
Right, and one was a trumped up nonsense thing about inflated footballs.
Yeah.
And this one is about possibly domestic violence abuse against women. Yep. So that's why ultimately you got to take that power out of Goodell's hand, because it's just there's too many complicating factors.
Bob, we got about 5 minutes.
All right, well then let's do the final segment.
Yeah. You got your new game.
A new game called Is It Wrong?
Yes.
Okay, so basically the premise is simple. Something happens in life. You take maybe a questionable path, or maybe you were fine, but we debate it and discuss it right here. All right, so here's what happened. So my wife and I, we were going up north, not far out north, but just outside of the city. We hit a Tim Hortons. I had to go to the bathroom really badly.
Yeah.
There were two washrooms, male, female, obviously.
Yep.
The guy's one was locked.
Mm-hmm.
The female one was empty. And it was only a single occupant.
Yep.
Right?
So you could lock the door?
You could lock the door, and there would be no one else in there with you. One said guys, one said women's. The guys' one was closed. There was nobody waiting. Is it wrong to go into the women's one?
One more question involves the word one.
Okay.
One or two?
One or two. Oh, one.
Oh, fine. Totally cool. Yeah. 100%. And I bet you overcompensated. Like in that case, after I washed my hands, I would clean if any water residue on the sink. Absolutely. Totally cool.
So
you'd
basically be like the your Airbnb guests.
You know how I would treat
Tanya and John?
Yeah, Tanya and John. Here's how I would treat that bathroom. When a soldier is given a rifle, when they start, they start basic training, the coda is you return that rifle cleaner than how it was given to you. That's how I would treat the
bathroom. Okay, but I feel, though, that is not addressing the central question. It's like...
It's not wrong.
It's not wrong.
One was locked. One was empty. You were going to be in there quick. And, you know,
should all single shots like that, where there's just a toilet in there, should they all be unisex then?
No, because women take longer than men. And if we can't have that advantage of being able to pee faster, to have to wait less time than women, it's one of the things
that's
not
really
a
good argument, though, is it? That making them unisex would take away the biological advantage I have in this case.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm being selfish.
That's not
hiding you. Yeah. So there it is. Now, no unisex.
All right. So I feel like I want to know from people who listen to the show.
Yeah.
We're pretty late in the game, so I don't know who's left. But if you're still there,
send
in your suggestions for Is It Wrong?
Yes.
I also want to play a game called Greater Than, Lesser Than next week.
Mm-hmm.
I got a Leafs one I was thinking about, because I was thinking about Nylander and contract situations and all that. So for next week, in fact, everyone has a week to prepare. You have a week to prepare.
Done.
The game Greater Than, Lesser Than is basically I throw out an option and you tell me who is greater or lesser in this case.
Mm-hmm.
William Nylander's career as a Leaf?
Yep.
Phil Kessel's career as a Leaf? Which one will be greater when it's all said and done?
Okay.
Greater than, lesser than.
Absolutely. Bob, a lot of fun.
Are we out? Are we done?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. You know, anything for next week? Talk about Tough Mudder.
Yeah,
I can.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's going to be Tough Mudder. Also, there is a fight going on in this building. Our Airbnb might get shut down.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, we got to get into that next week. All right, Maddie. Well, then let's shut her off and we'll get into the scraps next time.
Bye, Bob.
Bye, Matt.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.